Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Jim Petras is my guest today. It's always great to have Jim back. We'll get into domestic and some overseas things going on. There is so much. We'll cover as much ground as we can. I chatted briefly with Jim before the program relating to what he mentioned. Let me mention a headline that circulated a couple of days ago. I pulled up a website. I could have pulled up a lot of them, but this is a Money Watch one, and the headlines, U.S. CEOs push plan to raise full retirement age to 70. Well, they couldn't give a damn. They're millionaires, multimillionaires. Some of them are billionaires. They don't care about ordinary people. Well, they really want to destroy Social Security and Medicare and the rest of it. So you begin by raising the retirement age. I'm surprised they don't want to raise it to 100, Jim.
Well, Steve, it's a very serious proposition. Raising the age at which people can begin to draw their full Social Security is 70 years old, and the same age for receiving Medicare means essentially that you're going to get approximately 1 million Americans who will die before they collect Social Security. That is, after paying 50 years into Social Security for their social insurance, they'll get nothing. That's the first thing. The second thing, with regard to Medicare, I think one has to realize that by raising the age, essentially, you're going to get 3 million Americans who will be kicked off of Medicare. Prior to this proposal, at 65, it was high enough for Social Security, for Medicare. But now, by raising the age, precisely when people will most need medical care, essentially, you're pushing there's 5 million people off of Medicare without medical coverage. Now, let's see who's affected by that. Anybody with any kind of hazardous job is not going to be around to collect their Medicare treatment. Second of all, that will increase the rate of mortality because most people at that age will not be able to afford all the medical costs that go into sustaining their health. Moreover, hazardous occupations will be affected. And furthermore, people that reach that age usually get laid off with the new approach that the CEOs have of hiring younger workers at lower wages and with less health problems. You're going to get a lot of people laid off when they reach 60, 62, 65, and so they'll be without a job, without Medicare, and they're doomed. They're doomed to an unhealthy life, and many of them are going to die. So altogether, I would estimate that this is going to affect approximately 15 million Americans, that is, that are either going to die or lose their job or are going to be in very unhealthy conditions over the last decade of their life. And so this is a gulag kind of thing. This is a sentencing. 15 Americans, our lives are being put in jeopardy by the CEOs, like you mentioned, who have full comprehensive luxury health plans paid by their corporations, who can afford to go to the most luxurious clinics in the world, get the most high-priced medical attention, and yet they turn around and sentence 15 million Americans to death and sickness.
Jim, it is absolutely true. It goes back a few years for me when I wrote so much about the debate about Obama's health care plan. I called it Obamacare. forget the precise name, something like Affordable Care Act, but I remember quoting Ralph Nader. Well, the things that I wrote, I called it what it was. It was a handout to the healthcare industry, the sickness industry, mistakenly called the healthcare industry, to the giant insurance companies, the giant drug companies, the giant hospital chains. And I remember quoting Ralph Nader about this plan that left millions, well, universal healthcare supposedly, left millions of America literally out of luck on their own. It made healthcare more unaffordable than ever. And Nader said something like, it was the shame of the Western world. That was roughly what his quote was. And it really was. Because with all the benefits that were supposedly put in, there were so many loopholes that the industry could game the system, the insurance. No preconditions exist anymore. But if you got one, the insurance can double your premiums, triple your premiums. They can do any darn thing they want. There's no limit on how much they can charge. There's no limit on what the drug companies can charge. So ordinary people are priced out. As far as Social Security and Medicare go, Jim, nobody explains in the major media, what I call the scoundrel media, that these are not entitlements. These are insurance programs. Everybody who works pays payroll taxes. These are insurance premiums. It's the same thing you pay in your life insurance. When you die, would you want whoever controls this, the insurance company, to game the system and decide how much your heirs should get, if anything? Of course not. Well, Medicare and Social Security are exactly the same thing. It's a contractual federal obligation. They're welching on it, Jim. They're welching on it.
Yes, I think you're right, Steve. And the talk among the CEOs, the chief executive officers of corporations that essentially produce about or own about 30% of what's produced in the U.S., the so-called GDP. Now, these people also want to privatize Social Security. In other words, turn it over to Wall Street, who can get commissions. They can speculate with your pension funds. If the stocks they pick go down, so does your pension. There's no stability, and they take 3 to 5% off the top as what they call management fees. So essentially, you're $5,000 down each year before you even use your pension money for making bets. If you happen to hit the bad years, the years of crisis, when the stock market drops 10 or 15%, that's a 10 or 15% cut in your pension payments. And now they're threatening with this debt ceiling crisis. If they don't raise the debt limit, they say they won't be able to send checks for Social Security. Now, one-third of people over 65 depend on their Social Security check each month just to pay the basics, food, clothes, transportation, etc. So the priorities that I've read is first payments, if there's any money, goes to the bondholders. That is the people, big investors on Wall Street. They're the first ones to get any money that might be left over or found by the Treasury. Social Security is down the list, and that means you got about 15 million Americans who won't be getting a Social Security check, which is essential for the day-to-day existence. And this kind of political manipulation is to intimidate people to accept lower payments adjusted for inflation. No more inflation adjustment. So essentially, the inflation rate runs at least 3% a year. We'll be getting a 3% cut every year, and over a decade, we'll see a decline in Social Security's real value of 30%. So from all sides, they're attacking. Republicans say, let's privatize it. Obama says, let's eliminate the inflation adjustment. Republicans say, let's raise Medicare to 70 years old. Obama says, well, let's compromise. Let's find the, split the difference, 67 to 70, maybe 68 and a half. So it goes on, Steve. There's a deep sense here that American people are expendable. They're like one of these throwaway Kleenex that you blow your nose, you work people, and then you throw them away. And I think this is the big crisis in America today. Yesterday, Citibank, Goldman Sachs announced a huge increase in profits, $5, $6, $7 billion last year. And so the injustices of the American political and economic system stand out, that capitalism is incapable of generating wealth and profits and financing the social programs that people contributed to. It's robbery on a grand scale.
Yeah, it sure is, Jim. And the so-called fiscal cliff debate that I wrote a good number of articles on, it's never explained what's the theme of my articles, that this is a dirty bipartisan deal that was cooked up years ago, and Republicans and Democrats are in bed in this, all of this rhetoric, this to-ing and fro-ing that goes on, the stuff that makes the public headlines and the scoundrel media. They don't tell you what's really going on. This actually began decades ago. You could go back to the late 1970s, and it picked up in the 80s and the 90s, the new millennium, and under Obama's 4 years. And now they're really ratcheting it up big time. And the scheme is very simple. It's to destroy America's social contract, everything. They want to erode it gradually over time. A decade from now, the benefits that exist now will be a shadow of what they are now, or they will no longer exist. And that's the plan. And Obama insists on it. This rhetoric where he wants to make himself look like a good guy. Obama is no good guy. He is a corporatist from head to toe. He's always been that way.
Steve, it's a bipartisan approach here that is so harmful to Americans. But, you know, they all claim that there's shortages of funds, but there's never any shortage of funds to finance wars. They have wars now going on, of course, in Afghanistan. They're threatening Iran. They recently engaged in a war that destroyed Africa's most advanced welfare state in Libya. They're involved in Somalia. They're involved in Yemen. And now the French sent troops to Mali, another African country. This is the great irony. The French government claims to be socialist. Obama claims to be an Afro-American. And yet they're both ravaging and supporting an invasion of an African country against African people. Let's be very clear. The government they're supporting in Mali is a very corrupt government. It's a government that has no loyalty among the people. That's why its resistance to the Islamist forces is disintegrating. No one wants to support a government that's been stealing out of the public trough. And why the French have to send in their own troops? Because these puppet governments have no legitimacy and no support. And why are they doing this? They claim they're doing it because they're concerned about Islamist terror. And this terror song has been going on for a long time. Essentially, we have two things going here. One is the fact that there are a great deal of natural resources, both in Mali and in the neighboring countries like Niger, uranium, gold, etc. Secondly, I think what they're fearful of is that the fact that they supported Al-Qaeda in Libya is now boomeranging. Most of the arms that are being used in Mali for this war come from Libya, and they come from Libya because the U.S. and the French and English supplied the arms there. And so they play this double game. On the one hand, they support al-Qaeda against secular progressive governments, and on the other hand, they turn around and whine and complain that the Islamists are infringing upon their neo-colonial governments. And in the course of this, the people that suffer are the African people, as the West first ravages them with war and then inflicts upon them extremist governments. And in both cases, the Western governments, Obama, Holland, socialist, liberal, conservative, they're all phonies. They're all interested in plunder of the African continent.
Jim, that absolutely is true. A few weeks ago, I wrote an article that I call Scrambling for Africa's Resources. There's no question what's going on. Mali is making headlines, but they're the wrong headlines. You know, they're talking about hostages taken and hostages killed. They're talking about France sending in troops, other countries supplying whatever they're doing, some on a training basis, others doing other things, America supplying drones. What's key is never discussed. This isn't France's operation. This is America's operation. Libya was America's operation. Syria is America's operation. Let me change the word operation to war. So we got wars raging. America, Obama decided to take a more low profile. America was the lead belligerent in Afghanistan and Iraq. And Obama changed the strategy, or those around him changed the strategy. So America pretended to take a supportive role in Libya. It called the shots. America has commands, global commands. There's a North American command. There never was a North American command in World War II, but around 2002 or 3, a North America command was established. Is America threatened? I haven't noticed anything. Anyway, it exists. There's also something called AFRICOM. It's based in Stuttgart, Germany, of all places. If I remember the general's name in charge, I think his name is Ham. I think I quoted him in a few articles. But AFRICOM runs everything going on in Africa. President Hollande of France, I don't know what he wanted to do or didn't want to do, Jim. He was told what he would do. Sarkozy, his predecessor, he was told what to do. He was the front man tool against Gaddafi in Libya. Hollande is the front man against the northern rebels, or call them what you want, Al-Qaeda. Give them any name that you want. Mali, as you say, Jim, it's a terribly any government that Washington supports, you can bet it's a rotten one. If it's in Africa or if it's in Asia, let me change that to anywhere. It's corrupted, it's brutal, it's despotic. They may call themselves democratic or anything else, but they certainly are far, far from that. America isn't democratic. Neither is France, Germany, Britain, Israel, the rest of them. So France is simply doing America's bidding. And what's at stake? Africa is extremely resource rich. Jim, I think virtually any resource that exists in Africa, and so much of the continent remains undeveloped. So, my goodness, for the next century, there are trillions of dollars to be made. Well, America wants to get its grubby hands on most of it, and that's what Mali and Libya and all the rest of them are all about. But you'll never read that in the New York Times.
Well, Steve, you know, I have a question to ask you that's very troubling. In the 60s, when there was a Western intervention, the CIA and the Europeans, and overthrew the democratically elected Lumumba government, when Kwame Nkrumah was overthrown, when there was the Algerian Revolution against French colonialism, there was an enormous response among the Afro-American community and the few politicians that were elected to office at that time. But today, here is the U.S. ravaging Libya with the Europeans, setting up mercenary governments in Somalia, invading Mali, And I don't see any protests from the Afro-American congressmen. I don't see any church leaders standing up and saying to Obama, you're a traitor to the race. What are you doing to our African brothers? I don't see the Baptists, the Methodists, and other churches that previously expressed their repudiation of Washington's pillaging of Africa and overthrowing its leaders and invading countries. What's going on? What has happened to the great protest spirit of solidarity, Pan-Africanism, that existed among American Afro-Americans in the past? It's disappeared.
Yeah, it really has disappeared, Jim, and it really is shocking. Because as bad as things were in the 1960s, and we remember the civil rights struggles in the cities, the wrong parts of the cities were set ablaze, and people were really angry. And of course, we had some people around who were really very, very potent public voices, like Martin Luther King. Well, they got rid of him. There was Malcolm. They got rid of him. Anybody who stood up for any degree of social justice or civil rights or whatever, they got rid of them, or they silenced them or whatever. But where are these people today? You know, Jesse Jackson was there with Martin Luther King in the 1960s, and he sold out. He sold out. He decided it's better to get rich than help his own people, and I'm sure he's very rich.
Well, it's a sad commentary because there have been increase in electoral officials of black mayors, black congressmen, even getting some significant posts. But in the course of rising, they've turned their backs on their brothers and sisters in Africa and in their own community. So what the 10% that's made it in the system has turned their backs on the plight of the masses in Africa today, and in part they cover it up by supporting Obama. Obama has engineered more wars in Africa than any white president that preceded him.
Isn't that shocking, Jim? Isn't that shocking? And what bothers me the most, I guess the two things that bother me the most, again, what the people at the media, I call the scoundrel media, I just can't think of a better name to describe them, the scoundrel media, whether it's CNN or Fox or the New York Times, Washington Post, all of them, all the Western media, really do you see something good there? Once in a while, something sneaks in, but it's the exception that proves the rule. They never talk about this. A black man waging wars on black people, a black man claiming to be a populist or something close to it, taking benefits away from people who need them badly, and waging these global wars. I mean, he wages them indiscriminately, Jim. I mean, he goes from the Middle East to Africa. He challenges Russia. He challenges China. He's enforcing tyrannical laws in America. Anybody, he's got to kill this. He can decide on his own authority to order anybody in the world killed, including U.S. citizens, no matter where they may be, regardless of whether they did anything or not. Due processes by the boards, habeas by the boards. He promised to close Guantanamo. It's still open. He's got no plans to close it. And he's waging one war after another, but trying to do it more low-key than anything else. He's caused immeasurable harm. He's got another 4 years to do it. That's why I felt during the election campaign that I really couldn't see how it mattered much whether he or Romney was elected. In one respect, he's more dangerous because Romney couldn't get away with the stuff that Obama's doing. He's couching it in terms to make it look like he's helping people where he's really hurting them, and he's hurting them plenty, whether it's abroad, whether it's at home. Four more years of this stuff, Jim, and it keeps getting worse. Every president exceeds the worst of the previous ones, at least since Jimmy Carter. Reagan was worse. Bush 1 was the same as Reagan. Clinton exceeded Reagan. Bush 2, Obama. Whoever exceeds Obama in 2016, I guarantee will be worse than Obama. I wonder if humanity can survive this, Jim.
Well, Steve, let's put a positive spin on things here. I'm looking at the countries where working people's living standards have improved over the last decade, and the most outstanding case is China. Now, China is a poor country, and it shifted from socialism to capitalism. And in the course of these two decades or three decades since they made that transition, the first years, from roughly 1980 to 2000, Chinese sweatshops were notorious around the world. People were working 60-hour work weeks for $100 a month, so 30 cents an hour. But over the last decade, Chinese workers have engaged in all sorts of strikes, factory takeovers. They even take control of the CEOs and kind of holding them hostage to negotiate contracts. And, you know, the average increase of Chinese wage workers over the last 8 years has been 20%. The average worker in China today is making four times what they were making a decade ago. They're making about $450 a month. Now, that's not a lot of money by our standards, but when you think of where they're coming from and where they're going, it's impressive. And the thing that's salient here, which is significant, is that the Chinese workers who were notoriously and still are notoriously exploited have learned that only through class struggle, not depending on the elites, not supporting one leader or another, but pressing forward their demands through direct action, through strikes, through factory occupations, through riots, they've quadrupled their salaries, and they're still going up. The U.S. capitalists now are thinking about sending their their project Walmart to other countries, they said, because Chinese labor is becoming more expensive. And the point of this commentary is that the Chinese workers have woken up and decided to take action on their own behalf, something which we can all learn from. And it sounds a bit silly to say U.S. should learn from China. They're so poorly paid, we're told. But look at where they're coming from and the direction they're going. They didn't have a national health plan with the return to capitalism. They dismantled it. Well, it's being restored. They're bringing back a universal health coverage because millions of people have put this issue on the table in a direct way.
Oh, so true, Jim. I've written before. It was in my Wall Street book, maybe in my banker occupation book. I may have touched on it in that book as well. But I'm doing an article today on social inequality in America, and this stands out so strongly in my mind. Since around the mid-1970s in America, here in a decade, Chinese wages have risen 20%. I mean, amazing. And they'll probably keep going up because China is growing. It'll be the biggest economy in the world maybe in another decade or so. It'll pass America on a purchase basket basis. I remember writing an article, oh, it's over a year ago, that it's estimated it'll pass America. What a basket of items will cost, it'll pass America in about another 4 or 5 years. But since the mid-1970s in America, Jim, real adjusted wages on average have declined. So we're talking
There's a direct relationship between declining wages and declining strikes and increased salaries for union officials. So if you want to understand why American wages are decreasing and inequalities are increasing, just look at the fact that the class struggle and strikes and militancy has declined. And the reason that has declined is because the salaries of union officials are competing with that of the CEOs. That's the reason. No struggle, greater inequalities. No strikes, declining wages. And I think this is the key to this factor. The profits are going up. Caterpillar, General Motors, they're booming times, and it's time that some of this wealth is redistributed, but it's not going to happen just because the pie grows unless labor is organized and militant.
Indeed so, Jim, and I think the only solution for labor is for the rank and file to take things into their own hands, because the corrupted union bosses don't give a damn. Like so many others, like the corporate CEOs, they value their six-figure, maybe seven-figure salaries, their lush benefits. They show up in Switzerland for the annual conference there. They show up with the CEOs and the rest of them. It's an ugly system, Jim. Oh, wish we had another half hour to continue this. We'll do it next month. My best, Jim. I thank you very much. You're in a warm climb right now. It's not too bad in Chicago today, but it's going to get nippy in about 48 hours. Good idea to stay inside and write. Jim, many, many thanks. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Weekends, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.